Okay, so now we had a lot of nice talks on Starinert, Linus. And what I will do now is that I take you guys back to the standard sector again. So everything I will be telling now is standard Neutrino physics. So, and actually, I'm on the slideshow. Excellent. It will be a fast talk like this. Okay, so this is where we are standing now in terms of neutrino oscillations in three flavors. So we know the mixing angles from the various oscillation experiments. We have some slight hints that this delta phase that is driving CP violation in neutrino oscillations is non-zero. And we have mass splittings that are governing the oscillation frequencies, the smaller one that comes from, which is more prominent in solar neutrinos, and the larger one that is more prominent in atmospheric neutrinos. And the things that we don't know, I put on this slide. So one thing is that whether this large mixing angle that is most present in super-K in the accelerator experiments is larger than 45 degrees or smaller, so which is the octant of the sky. Then what is the real value of the CP violating phase? And then, most important for this talk, what is the mass hierarchy of the neutrinos? So we know from solar neutrinos that this mass eigenstate nu2 has to be heavier than mass eigenstate nu1. But what we don't know is whether this delta m square atmospheric is actually larger than zero or smaller than zero. And depending on this, this third mass eigenstate is either below or above. So that is what I will be talking about. Now we can ask why actually this, as you are talking about symmetries in the mass hierarchy, is actually not so much a symmetry. But one fact for sure is that experiments are able to measure this, or let's say the next generation of experiment is probably able to do the mass hierarchy, not so much the other things. And the other is that while it's not a symmetry in itself, there is of course some symmetries involved. For instance, if you are a normal hierarchy in the neutrino sector, this was correspond to the quark sector. So the if you look at the three generations, as you put it here, here are the charged leptons and quarks, here are the neutrinos at a mass scale way below. So a normal hierarchy would be the same case as it is the case for the charged quarks. So this would be nice. And or not, might be also nice to have something different. And then there's, of course, also still the chance that the mass splittings that we have measured in the oscillations are relatively small in comparison to the absolute neutrino mass scale, which is this quasi-degenerate case that is shown here. And also this would be quite a natural, if you want, and interesting to know about. Then the next thing is for sure. Sorry, I have to. Better now? Maybe. You need a mass hierarchy to know about the CP violating phase in the neutrinos. So especially in the neutrino beam experiments that have a sensitivity to that, you're comparing lastly the appearance probability for electron neutrinos in a mu neutrino beam, and you do it once for the neutrino and once for the antineutrino sector and compare these values. And then depending on what hierarchy you're living in, actually what you're measuring as a ratio of these two probabilities has some interdependence of CP phase and the mass hierarchy. So these blue circles and red circles here are two possible parameter combinations that you would measure in NOVA, which is just now running in CVS. And there's an overlap region where actually you could get the same combination of oscillation probabilities in neutrino and antineutrino sector for two different realizations of hierarchy and CP phase. And then, this we will be talking tomorrow about much more, I guess, is that this mass hierarchy also has an influence on your sensitivity scale for neutrinos double beta decay. So in case of the inverted scale, you get a lower limit on the effective double beta neutrino mass. And so knowing this will tell you something about where your neutrinos double beta decay experiments have to go, and also will help you with the interpretation of the results that you get. And then finally, and this we already discussed, so you can of course get also by now very tight limits on the neutrino mass sum, so the mass of the three light neutrinos. And while it's yet not enough, but if you think of future generations of cosmological measurements, at some point knowing whether you are in the inverted hierarchy or in the normal hierarchy will give you from your upper bound or your measurement of the neutrino mass some also the measurement of the lightest neutrino mass that is plotted down here. So depending then on in which of the two scenarios you are, again, you will learn something about the absolute mass scale of the neutrinos. Okay, so much for motivation. What I will talk about now mostly is how you can measure the mass hierarchy. And actually, there are, let's say, more than three groups of experimental approaches where you can try to do it. And the first one is the idea that you use a very long Bayesian experiment. So very long baseline means that you get, again, a mu neutrino beam and then shoot it for a baseline that should be something like 1,000 kilometers or even a bit more. And then you look for the electron neutrino appearance signal, as it's, for instance, done or will be done in Dune. And there is not really a nice way to show it, at least I don't know of it, so I show it in the ugly way, which is the oscillation probability to find electron neutrinos in a mu neutrino beam. And you see, this is already the simplified version where you have only three terms that are contributing, but not looking too much at the numbers. So there's the three terms, and the first one is the standard oscillation term, let's say, that is, for instance, also driving the oscillations in T2K. And this is appearance probability governing muon to electron neutrino, so the leading term. Then there's this bluish term here, which is the solar oscillations. And if you're going to the first atmospheric oscillation maximum, where all this electron neutrino appearance experiments actually sit, then it does not really contribute. So this is a very small term, so you can practically forget about it. And then there's a last term down here, and this now has a lot of extra terms. And for instance, it also contains here the CP violating phase. And if I mark now everything down, that will create a difference between measuring the appearance probability of electron neutrinos in a muon neutrino beam versus the appearance probability of electron antineutrinos in a muon antineutrino beam. You see that there should be some difference. So first of all, there is this intrinsic asymmetry. So it could be the intrinsic asymmetry from the CP violating phase between neutrinos and antineutrinos, which appears in the third term here. But then you have all these A's and B's in all of the three terms, and they depend on the metapotential that is created by the Earth. So not so much an asymmetry of the neutrinos, but an asymmetry of the Earth that consists not of antimatter, but of matter. And if the metapotential is large enough in comparison to this delta 1-3, which is lastly depending on the size of the mass splitting, then depending on whether you're in neutrino or antineutrino mode, you will get a difference in the oscillation probabilities of neutrinos and antineutrinos. And this you try to measure. Actually here, this is more practical, what will you will actually measure. So you're looking for this difference, and you will get an enhanced oscillation probability either in the neutrino sector. If you are in normal hierarchy, then there the oscillation probability gets larger. Or if this inverted hierarchy, then you will get enhanced oscillation probability for the antineutrinos. And then again, as your metapotential has to come in the same order of magnitude as your mass splitting, delta m square 3-1, it helps if you are further away from the source. So this is shown here. Here you have oscillation probabilities as a function of energy, and you see that for a relatively short distance, the blue curve and the red curve are what you expect in the case of normal and in the inverted hierarchy. And then you also see that there are color bands that depend on the CP phase that are also giving you some contribution to this appearance probability, and you see that these two curves more or less overlap. So if you're very close to your detector, or if you have a very short beam line, you have actually no chance to tell the two apart from each other. But on the other hand, if you go to a very large distance, so here, this 2,000 kilometer would have been the beam line from CERN to Pilsaimi that was discussed in Europe, you can see that if you now go in the order of the first oscillation maximum at around 4 to 5 GeV, actually you have a very large difference between normal hierarchy and inverted hierarchy in appearance probability. So with this kind of signature, you can pretty easily tell apart by help of the meta effects what is the mass hierarchy. So for the mass hierarchy measurement in general, you can say longer baseline means larger energy, which means larger meta effect, and so easier time to tell apart the two hierarchies. Now, the two projects that are now discussed for doing this kind of measurements is on one hand NOVA, which is actually running now with a baseline of 800 kilometers, which is close to this 1,000 kilometer criterium that I put out in the first place. So it has some sensitivity to the mass hierarchy, but it's not too great actually because of the still relatively small matter effects. And then on the other hand, there's this AMNF or Dune or whatsoever, this future project that will shoot a beam over a longer baseline from Fermilab to Homestake. And there you will get much better sensitivity on the neutrino mass hierarchy. And to give you a more quantitative feeling of that, so this is not the most recent situation, but still good enough, I think. So here you have plots that give you the sensitivity to mass hierarchy as a function of measurement time, also taking into account when the experiments will start. And here on the left side, you have it for the normal hierarchy, here for the inverted hierarchy, which in some cases makes a small difference. And you see here over the runtime of NOVA, if you're very lucky, you can get up to a 3 sigma level of discriminating between the two hierarchies, and then you will need ABNE or Dune in order to cross this threshold of 3 sigma, and depending on the size of the detector and the statistics you collect, you eventually end up with telling you really what the hierarchy is. And we see that there is a certain uncertainty in the prediction of how good you can get, and this is again the degeneracy with the delta CP phase. So depending on what value is the CP phase, your mass hierarchy is more or less prominent. Okay, now we've seen already that it's good if you have a long baseline, and a further good way to get a very long baseline is to look at atmospheric neutrinos, because there you are now really has the possibilities that you shoot once through the diameter of the Earth. And this is what is shown here. So the idea in principle is still the same. So you have a neutrino beam made of atmospheric mu neutrinos with energies that you're interested in the range of, let's say, 2 to 20 GeV, and baselines, depending on whether you come from above or below, between 20 and 30,000 kilometers. And now you're running through this matter potential created by the Earth's crust and mantle. This is shown here as this gray shaded region. And then depending again on what path you are taking through the Earth, you're either going through the core region or not, your baseline is a bit different. And the effect of the mass hierarchy will shift in position in your spectrum. So you can look in this case again for the electron neutrino appearance, but most of the measurement power is actually coming from the muon to muon neutrino disappearance. And your detector requirements in the end is that you have to have a low enough threshold in order to be able to see these 2 GeV neutrinos. So this is putting some stress on the detectors that you can use for this. You need angular resolution to determine your baseline. You need flavor identification to tell muon and electron neutrinos apart. And what is nice to have is also that if you can distinguish neutrinos and antineutrinos by means of a magnetic field and measuring the lepton charge of the finite state lepton, then you gain, because in this case you cannot choose between neutrino and antineutrino mode, you get everything at the same time. And now there's a range of projects that are actually trying to do this. So one are low energy extensions of the large neutrino telescopes, so Pingo on the Antarctic and Orca in the Mediterranean, which in both cases try to lower the threshold far enough that you are able actually to see this few GeV atmospheric neutrinos. Then there's Hypercam, Yocande will have some good sensitivity coming more or less from the low energy and getting a large enough detector mass that you can gather statistics in high enough numbers. And then there's an indium project, ENO, which is a magnetized iron collimator, which would also give you discrimination of neutrinos and antineutrinos, but on the other hand struggles a bit with the target mass that you need. Now what I want to do now is that I show you for Pingu, was the case of Pingu, what the signal would look like. So here, since we have seen already for IceCube, we have a plot of the neutrino energy on the y-axis and the cosine of the standard angle on the x-axis, and then you have here an intensity pattern of an oscillation pattern of for the mu neutrinos that are appearing in your detector, and this is for the normal hierarchy. This is for the inverted hierarchy, and you have to measure this difference. So I can go back again to the normal hierarchy. So it's not huge, the difference, but there is a difference. Actually, this is a plot of the difference, and you have statistics in the order of a few 10,000 events per year if your detector is large enough, so you have some chance to measure it. Then, of course, this would be for a detector that has perfect energy and directional resolution. And if you don't have this, your difference comes down to that here. So now the difference in event numbers here is counts per bin per year. So we are only on the order of 1 or minus 1 between the two predictions. This is coming straight up, yeah. And this is at the horizon. And but you can gain again. So this was for muon events only. You can also look at the electron appearance. So if you take the two signals together, actually you get quite a good sensitivity. And since I show here again, so here in this plot says now a sensitivity estimate for Pingu. It's not the most recent ones, but it's still more or less valid. And depending on your chosen oscillation parameters and whether it's normal or inverted hierarchy, your sensitivity after a few years is also in the 3 to 6 sigma range. Okay, I have to go on. And now the last thing I will be talking about is a different approach now based on reactor neutrinos and lower energies, and actually not on matter effects, but on an interference effect in vacuum oscillations. So if you remember what Kamland and also Dyer-Bay and so on are measuring are the disappearance of electron antineutrinos. So you start out with the electron antineutrinos at the reactor, and then you go away, and then at about 1 kilometer, you get the first minimum that is due to zeta 1.3. And then if you go further out to 60 kilometers, or in the case of Kamland to 200 kilometers, you get the solar neutrino oscillations due to zeta 1.2, and they give you a very large suppression of the electron neutrino flux. And your detectors are only able to detect the electron antineutrino, so you see a pure disappearance signal. And what I've shown here is this is a standard wisdom that is enough to understand the Kamland results, and this implicitly assumes that this mass splitting for here, this delta n square 3.1 is the same as delta n square 3.2, which is true and very good approximation, because delta n square 2.1 is a factor of 30 smaller than the other two. But if you want to resolve the neutrino mass hierarchy, actually, you have to look exactly for this difference, because the mass hierarchy lastly asks, is this delta n square 3.1 a bit larger than the delta n square 3.2, or is it a bit smaller? That is the effect you're looking at. And now, if you write again a 3 oscillation formula in its full beauty, actually end up with 3 parts. And in comparison to what I've shown you before, the small difference between the delta n square 3.2 and 3.1 will actually lead to this tiny wiggles as a function of a distance shifting in phase relative to each other. So actually, at the first solar maximum, which is at around 55 kilometers for reactor neutrinos, these two terms driven by delta n square 3.2 and delta n square 3.1 will be just out of phase. And by measuring this phase, you can actually measure the neutrino mass hierarchy. Now, you can do it either as a function of distance, but for an experiment, it's much easier to do it as a function of neutrino energy. So you do a projection on the spectrum of the reactor neutrinos, and this you see over here. So here again, you have the reactor neutrino spectrum already folded into the cross section. And then in blue and in pink, you see the oscillation pattern for as a neutrino is emerging either for normal hierarchy or for inverted hierarchy. And if you are able to resolve the small spectral wiggles and their position in the energy spectrum, then you can tell again apart the two hierarchies. And actually, there are two projects that try to follow this up. So one is Juno in southern China, which is a follow-up experiment of Dyer-Bay, and which is here a bit left of Hong Kong. And the other idea is to do an extension of the Reno experiment that also measured zeta 1.3 at a distance of 50 kilometers from reactors in Korea. And the requirement, as I said you already, is that you have this possibility to resolve the wiggles in your spectrum and to position them. And in order to resolve them, you need something like a 3% energy resolution at 1 MeV. Now, this reactor neutrino experiments are basically all liquid scintillator experiments. And to get this kind of resolution, you need something like 1,100 photoelectrons per MeV. And this is about, I think, 3 to 4 times what Kahnland actually had. And you have to do this on a relatively large scale. So you need something like 20 kilotons of liquid scintillator in order to collect enough statistics at a distance of about 50 kilometers to be able to resolve this with a needed precision. So you are aiming for about 100,000 antineutrino events over a period of 5 to 6 years. This is how such a detector would look like. So basically, it's not so much different from what Kahnland and other detectors would look like. So large scintillator surrounded by a lot of PMTs. You have basically to cover all the surface that your detector has with light detecting devices in order to get enough light out to get the required energy resolution. But while it's really on the verge of what you can technically do, you can do it. It's not impossible. You have to put it underground. I'm a bit running out of time here. And then again, if you look on how well you can do this in comparison to other experiments, you see that you can, after a measurement time of about 5 years, you get again in this region where you have about 3 sigma sensitivity for telling apart the mass hierarchies. And here, now the main uncertainty is how good your energy resolution is, how good you get systematics effect on the energy scale under control. And this will tell you in the end how well you can do the measurement. Now, there's one last aspect. So actually, all of these efforts are going ahead. And one of the reasons for that is that if you combine them, actually, the sum is better than just adding up a lot of delta chi-squares in order to get your combined measurement. And here you can see what you can do if you do some two relatively poor measurements, in once in Daya Bay and once in Pingu, because the measurement techniques are so different from each other. Actually, when you are doing here now plotted as a function of delta n squared 3,1 as an evaluation of the results, even if your single measurements are on the level of a 1 to 2 sigma, the combination of both would already give you a 4 to 5 sigma result. So adding these things up is actually then giving you an enhanced sensitivity, and I guess, stay tuned for the next 5 to 10 years, and maybe we can give you a good result. Okay, thanks. Okay.
So what is the situation at present from T2K and other places? Is it about approaching 2 sigma in favor of the normal hierarchy?
I mean, so there's some sensitivity. Actually, it was not at neutrino. Does anybody know what is now the status in the hierarchy?
Yeah, it looks like it's about 2 sigma, at least from the current combination of T2K and NOVA. Of course, that relies on the fact that they have some kind of slight tension in their appearance versus for their neutrino versus anti-neutrino electron appearance. Particularly for T2K, you see that their neutrino electron neutrino appearance signal versus their electron anti-neutrino appearance signal seems to be slightly higher than what you might expect. And so it kind of pulls everything toward normal hierarchy with some CP violation. But it's still low statistics, and we'll see where, at least my impression is, we'll see where it goes as I collect more data.
I'm sorry, just one of the experiments alone, as time goes on, how much would you be able to say?
So
who wants to answer that?
The combination of NOVA and T2K brings you on the 2 to 3 sigma level, if you're lucky. It depends a bit on what is CP phase and what is the hierarchy.
had the question about the Pingu sensitivity to the CP phase. In the inverted hierarchy seemed very small, if I understood the width of the band, and it's very large. If you could go to slide 33, for example.
Okay.
I didn't understand the width of the bands there are related to your choice of CP phase?
In the case of Pingu, not. In the case of Pingu, the main parameter is the value of delta 2,3. This is why I was looking.
okay.
Technically. Now, Pingu doesn't have much sensitivity on the CP phase. For this, you have to go even to lower energies in order to see the difference.
Okay, thanks.
So nuclear physicists are often more worried about the uncertainties in interpreting the neutrino response function in these targets for long baseline neutrinos than the high energy community. And so I think a lot of us would like to see really big effects. So I've heard an argument that another strategy for the long baseline program is to exploit the existing beamline toward Ash River and put a more capable detector there, not to measure the hierarchy, but to try to constrain CP violation, and then go to a baseline similar to the one in Europe to try to do a follow-up hierarchy experiment. Have people really looked at this quantitatively to decide what is the optimal set of experiments to do given a certain amount of money?
I mean, the optimal kind of experiments would probably be a combination of a very short baseline where you can measure the CP phase without too much interference with the mass hierarchy, and a very long baseline in order to measure only the mass hierarchy, drowning out the CP dependence. So this is what I was showing you two slides before. So this is for sure the optimum condition, and then yeah, you know, there are different reasons why this won't happen. But, I mean, this is probably the setup. If you had this combination of experiments, it would give you, from a physics point of view, the optimal answer to these two questions. Yeah.